Welcome to Smart Amazing Conversations with Dr. Nancy, a podcast that takes a look at stories of life and leadership for smart, amazing women and men like you.
The way I can give support to the world right now is by showing up. The most important thing is don't think just that you have to bring anything. Bring yourself, show up.
If you are in a position of leadership and a position of management, bring women along with you.
Supporting women is Dr. Nancy's passion and her purpose, and talking with other women and men who promote women's leadership is one of her favorite things to do.
I've yet to meet a woman who did not know what she really wanted. She was just either afraid to ask the questions or she was afraid of what the answers meant.
Their stories connect us and help us understand that the possibilities are endless if we support each other and lift other women up.
Trust is created by persistent identity. I show up in my conversations. I build relationship. I show up as myself time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And trust is built. It's one conversation at a time.
Frederique Irwin is president and CEO of the National Women's History Museum. She brings to the role more than 25 years of experience in strategic management, nonprofit, and commercial business, operations, impact, and entrepreneurship. Prior to joining the museum, she served as Managing Director of Impact Strategy at the Sorensen Impact Center, where she managed high-level partnerships with leading organizations in the social impact sector. During that time, she also led initiatives around improving equity in higher education and driving systems-level change for equity for women in entrepreneurship. She also was the founder and CEO of Her Corner, a company educating women on how to scale their businesses from 2012 until its sale in 2021. Over that period, she expanded Her Corner across multiple cities in the United States and helped thousands of women-owned businesses scale. Now here's Dr. Nancy and her guest, Frederique Irwin.
I'm going to start with something a little bit different because I'm going to start with a public apology. Because before you came on board as the CEO, I had just recently become a board member of the National Women's History Museum. So I was very, I was like thinking about how things should be. And I'm very much about diversity and inclusion. That's my background, and equality and equity. So the first time I saw you, I went, blonde hair, blue eyes, and beautiful. I went, I don't know about that. And I remember, and I thought, maybe she's too fluffy. Maybe she's too. And then, as I got to know you and I got to know you and getting to know you, I thought, no, she's the real deal. Don't worry about it. She's going to be okay. So that's what I'm saying right now. What I saw and what I thought, I take it all back because just getting to know you, you are a tigress. So I'm so excited about you taking over this board because things have just definitely just turned around completely. So I want to thank you publicly. And again, I was wrong. I don't usually share that. I was wrong. So
that's funny.
And all right, let's go back to my other question, which is, I love the name Frederick, but Fred gets you in.
Yes.
I have a good friend. Her name is Raylene. But she uses Ray. She's an owner of a top. She's an insurance broker, has all over the United States. And then she was also very much in the banking business. So Ray always got her through the door and always surprised people when she walks through the door. But it's amazing how a name can make things so different. So let's talk about that. Frederick, it's a beautiful name. And of course, you speak four languages. Today, please speak English. I don't know Russian. I have no.
Хорошо. Who will speak English?
Vodka. That's all about all I can do. Vodka. Okay, there you go. So tell me how you got to be you. Fred.
Yes. I have, of course, two French parents, and they immigrated to Washington, D.C., and I didn't learn English until I was sent to school in the United States, American school, kindergarten. And, Frederick is a common name in France. It is not in the U.S. And so from the very beginning, I was like, well, I might as well just be Fred because everybody knows the name Fred. And my parents were nervous that I would get a complex, a girl named Fred. And I just didn't. I really I think I just was born with an extra dose of confidence to the point where the first time I traveled internationally by myself, I was 5 years old. My parents put me on the plane in Washington and I flew to France to meet somebody on the other side. And ever since that moment, my parents were like, she's going to be just fine. And that didn't mean that I didn't get in a lot of trouble. And I didn't, you know, because mostly I did not respond well to the rules that I thought were ridiculous, in particular that applied to women. I remember the first time I met my father-in-law, and he's from New York. We're driving around Long Island, and he points out this beautiful men's club of New York. And I'm like, what? I'm like, that's stupid. And he goes, what do you mean? I'm like, why do you need to have a men's club? Like what? And he goes on and on about why it's so special. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I think that's a bunch of crap. And it took us about 20 years to recover. But,
yes.
Anyways, that's the kind
the way you looked and the way you acted, they didn't come together, did they? He thought she's going to be the sweet little, wonderful little wifey for my son. And she's not quite like that.
Exactly. So, you know, I like to get along with people, but I just don't really suffer nonsense. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. So
yeah,
especially you and I have talked about this. We just don't have time for, you know, dilly-dallying anymore. There is just, it really is frustrating to my core how things are going for women right now. And I just think that, you know, sometimes I wonder to myself, women took such a hit, if you will, during COVID. We were the caregivers, we lost wages, we, you know, so many things impacted women. And coming out of COVID has been hard. And so I feel like women already were kind of beaten down. And it seems like since that moment, things have piled on and piled on. And that's what makes me get up in the morning, is that I feel like we've got to energize everybody to remember what needs to be done.
Well, joining the National Women's History Museum was probably the one thing that I could truly see that the storytelling and telling the stories of the women, you know, that we don't know about, and the abundance that where we're coming from. You know, you can't be what you can't see, what you can't hear, and what you can't read about. You cannot be it. We really need our role models, we need our mentors, and we need our sponsors. So no, we're out of time. We're out of time. It's time for us to do what we've got to do. But, you know, I mean, and your background, though, is perfect for what you're doing, you know, managing director, impact your strategies and your logistics are really the key to making this happen. Because you know what I like about you is that you see the big picture, but then you see the details and the minutia that needs to go into that process. And not everybody's able to do that.
And
so
thank you. It is sometimes my Achilles heel, because if you spend too much time in the details and the weeds, then you slow yourself down and you don't do a good enough job of delegating and empowering others. So it kind of is a two-sided coin, you know?
Yeah.
Well, as is everything.
You know, and I think we both come from a place where, you know, I did not feel prized as a girl, never did. And as a woman, even less, you know, and I grew up, I mean, I would be the only woman in the board meeting at the banks. I would be the woman who would. So, I mean, I was able to see all those things. My grandmother, both my grandmothers took care of their businesses. My mother was a top real estate agent in Washington, D.C. So I was, at least I had role models to show me what women could do. And my little 4'11" grandmother would go into a restaurant and they'd want to put us by the kitchen door and she'd go. And she'd point to where she wanted to go. And that little woman, she took me around. I drove her big old Cadillac and took her in places and she would just point and click. And you know, so I did have some good role models. But then in the real world, the more I tried to achieve, the less I was respected. You know, the more I elevated myself, and I'm sure you felt that also, the less I was more of a threat.
Mm-hmm. So, and I've spent a lot of time, Dr. Nancy, thinking about this threat piece to, you know, and what I think is that right around age 9 or 10 is when you start to see girls think that boys are stronger, girls are more vulnerable. And that, if you begin to imagine what we then pile on to that, right? So you've got the girls who begin to think that, and then what other messages are they getting about inferiority or not capable enough, or, you know, what are they learning? What's in their physical textbooks? What are they seeing around them? And then you accelerate just 20 years, and you've got 20 years, let's say, of this buildup of perception. And now, like you said, you're in the workforce. And as a woman, first thing you have to do is try to forget all of that stuff and try to not listen to those inner voices and try to tell yourself, I believe in myself, I can do this. But that's not enough. You're also up against people and their own perceptions, because they got the same 20-year pileup of stories that didn't include women, right? Yeah. And so that really keeps me up at night. Yeah. And it just makes me nuts.
It's that stink. I call it stinking thinking. The woulda, coulda, shoulda. And of course, the media doesn't help anything. You know, and my first book was Timeless Women Speak, Feeling Youthful at Any Age, is about aging. It's ageism. And the book is coming out again. It's coming out again. It's been completely redone, new research, but it's again talking about ageism in our country and the fact that, you know, stay young, stay beautiful, stay thin if you want to be loved. And it's still out there. And now there are older women talking about that and saying, this is bull crap. This is crap. This is absolute crap. What's going on? But again, how many women are swallowing that and chewing that up and taking that and now looking at their own daughters and saying, geez, I don't want you to have that legacy. But the point is that we want to change all that. We want women to be confident and understand the shoulders that we're standing on of your grandmother, your great-grandmother, my great-grandmother, the mothers that really have made us who we are today, because there's wonderful people in our history, our own histories, that we, you know, I think ancestry.com is a wonderful thing to go back and find out where you come from, because there really are so many things that you've DNA, RNA, but also the lessons learned that we can all learn from. But again, your background, I love, let's talk about her corner, because I think your background is very important, where you've come from, where you're transitioning, because you also had to have the trials and tribulations. Nobody gets anywhere. The people that say they've had a smooth ride, I don't trust them.
My gosh. Look, I tell every new business owner, if you are not stomping around or crying once a week, every week for your first year, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so I often say that my background's pretty cookie cutter kind of business, right? Undergrad, MBA, management consulting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I love business. It makes my socks go up and down. I've been thinking about business from the moment I could think about businesses. And I was running my third company, I was a services company, trying to staff women who had opted out of the workforce so that we could get them back in the workforce. And it was hard. And I was like, why is this so hard? I'm like, I have an MBA. I've worked with billion-dollar companies. Why is this so stinking hard to build a small business? And I was stomping around, you know, and I look out my window and I realized that the woman across the street had built her own company. And then I looked the other way and I'm like, and that lady's built a company too. So I called them up. And I said, you know, what if we just started getting together and we only brought together women who were serious about their businesses? So, you know, I don't want the cat whisperers and the soul coaches. Like, I want somebody who
the
is
bleeding heart, the big heart. Yeah. Gotcha.
I'm like, let people who are committed to building a business. And so that started, and I made it hyper local and no competition and in person. And what happened was very, very quickly, I guess all these other neighborhoods in the area were like, hey, can you start a group for us? Can you start? So I started looking into the market and I was like, what's going on here? And what was interesting is that the rate of women businesses was going like this. Women were launching businesses faster than ever, but those businesses weren't thriving. And in fact, a man's business still today, a year out, makes about $400,000 a year. Meanwhile, women's businesses on average, 88% of them make less than $100,000. And I couldn't understand that, Dr. Nancy, because I also had realized that more women were graduating from college than ever before. So these were educated women launching businesses, not thriving. So I realized something. I realized that if you put these women together, women are highly collaborative. And so long as they're not trying to do the exact same thing, then they will help one another in ways that are transformative. And so I started just putting these little groups together. And, you know, because I was a consultant, I would be like, okay, here's how you think about this. And here's how you think about this. And here's a framework for this. And it just took off. And so next thing I knew, I had to close down, sell the third company, start to run this, and started hiring facilitators to train these women and organizing women based on like, hey, you're right at that $1 million mark. You're in that 0.2% of women. Let's get you to 2 million, 3 million, 5 million. And I then brought in a business partner and I did this for 10 years and it was amazing. These stories of these women, and it taught me a lot too. I had to build a brand. I had to build a business. I had to pivot. Sometimes COVID hit, but you know what? I got really mad because 10 years after doing that, I started counting all the women I had helped in 10 years. It was somewhere in the thousands and probably more, like a lot. But you know what? I didn't think it was good enough. I was like, I am not going to make a big enough impact in this point-to-point model. So I sold the business and I went to the Sorensen Impact Center Institute now. And I thought, hey, if I work with government agencies, large foundations like the Gates Foundation, JP Morgan, state and local organizations, and let's see if we can change the systems that are holding women back. And we started doing that. We brought in data scientists. We brought in, it was PhDs. It was through university. It was incredible. And then I got frustrated again because I realized that systems level change takes forever. And then out of nowhere, here comes the National Women's History Museum knocking on my door. And my first answer was, are you sure? Like, are you sure you have the right person? Because, you know, I'm not a museum background person and I've never run a nonprofit. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized my first step with my business was point to point. Then I went upstream and tried to change systems. And what I finally realized is I have to go all the way downstream to where this starts. And that's where we need to change the game. Yeah. And that right there is why I came to the museum, even though what did I know about running a nonprofit? And I've learned a lot.
Well, it's it's a social profit. We don't use that term, social profit. But the most important thing is that we understand where that confidence comes from, where that self-esteem comes from. And it really is, it boils down to, you know, again, what we're doing right now are educating some of these organizations about money. I know we've talked about this, money being a tool, but women's negotiating, the things that are most important. And the reason men are successful is, but by the way, they walk in a door with less than the education. They don't even care what the job is. It's going to be on the job training. They're already talking about their raises and their bonuses. And women are just going, just please hire me. Just please hire me. I don't care how much it costs. And I don't care if I ever get a bonus or a raise. But the point is it goes back to learning, self-esteem, and confidence. And again, these networks that we're creating, and this is what we're doing right now with the National Women's History Museum and Women Connect for Good and Tiffany Schlenk. Yeah. We're bringing organizations together that understand that. And when we when we lift those women up each and every time, they also realize they don't have to do it by themselves. And they don't have to wear the Superwoman t-shirt underneath their heavy duty suits or whatever they're wearing that at that moment, because it really is possible to work with lots of different people. And there's lots of slices of the pie and different ways. There's things I don't want to do that you do better. There's a company that does something better than my organization does. And I don't want to do that. So why don't I just refer it on? And that's what happens, that referral base, that network that's created. And that's what we're going to do with the National Women's History Museum. And I think you understand that better than anyone now. I don't think they did. I don't think they understood that.
You know, I had a conversation yesterday with a very large makeup brand, national, international brand, about a partnership. And they said to me they said, well, you know, we already invest in Vital Voices and Black Girl Ventures and this and that. And I said, and that's awesome. That is fantastic. Our job is to inspire the possibilities, to get women and girls to inspire the possibilities. And then if it's a young Black woman looking for funding, you're already supporting Black Girl Ventures. If it's a girl who needs leadership training, you're already supporting Vital Voices.
Yeah.
My job is not to compete with them. My job is to go, I always say, you know, from a for-profit sector, I'm looking for the hockey stick where it goes from the number of minds and young girls I can activate. That is my measure of impact. How many women can I inspire to think? And then, by the way, these resources are out there. The ones you're funding, the other Vital Voices, they're out there. But first, we have to get them to believe and to be inspired by other stories.
No, I think the stories are so, you know, I was like you, though. I was thinking, now, what can we do to really create that passion for so many people? And the global piece we've been working on, and we're continuing to work on that piece. We actually just talked to the Eisenhower program yesterday. I'll have to talk to you about that, because they've got a lot of women involved, but they're all over the world. So, the Eisenhower program is just actually phenomenal. But again, the storytelling was always, you know, it was the only way I could see that women have to see. They can't see it, they can't hear it, and they can't read it. And our, you know, I grew up in Virginia, and we grew up in this kind of the same areas, but it was Jamestown. I was learning about Indians. I was learning about Georgia. we take a field trip to Monticello. I mean, the point is that history books never really talked about the women in those history books, like Susan B. Coleman, you know, our CEO, our chair of our board is related to Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah.
I mean, we just, you know, that's phenomenal. But a lot of people say, well, who's Susan B. Anthony? You know, and the Black feminists, I mean, we don't know what we don't know. And the ERA, you know, I've already had that conversation with you. The woman said to me, well, what's that? I said, it's the Equal Rights Amendment. She goes, well, what's that about? And I explained it to her, and she goes, and she told me it sounded like socialism. And that's when I thought, I might want to turn around and hit you. So I think I better go walk away really quickly. So, and we have that to contend with. So again, but there's a growing number of us, and there's a growing number of men and women who are going to continue to educate boys and girls about the importance of equality and equity. That's my job. That's what I dream about. And the day that I feel equal, you know, that I can walk out and feel that way. Because when I was growing up as a girl, I felt less. I was the biggest tomboy on the block. I could kick the ball further than anybody. They came because I was good in sports. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I did. That's how I excelled. So,
yeah. You know, today I just had lunch with this woman who's one of our supporters, and I went to her community apartment where she lives in a kind of a nursing home situation. We had lunch together there. She's maybe mid-80s. She was one of the first women physicists in this country. And she worked for Northrop Grumman. And then she built like simulation models for NASA and the art. I mean, she is amazing. And she was telling me that last week she was talking to a little Girl Scout troop about what it means to be a physicist. And she showed a picture of her as the only girl, both in her college class and her graduate class, et cetera. And this one little girl who was 5 years old raised her hand and said, Miss Wicker, were those boys nice to you when you were there by yourself? And she said, they were, once they realized I was smart and that I believed in myself. But it was interesting, right? So even little girls already at five are looking at these photos and going, what did that feel like being the only woman, the only girl, you know, it already at 5 years old, that little girl is thinking about, wow, that sounds interesting, but do I want to go through those steps? And are people going to be nice along the way? You know what I mean? So the only way is to amplify Dorothy's stories, right? To say, yes, of course you can. It might not always be the most fun, and maybe some people won't be nice to you, but if you believe in yourself, as you said, and what you can do, it'll be okay.
Well, I think women, girls and women have to understand not everybody's going to like you. This likability quotient is, you know, that was Hillary, her likability quotient. You know, you were like, what does that have to do with being the president of the United States? Her likability, the way she dressed and the likability quotient. I mean, you know, this denigration of our political candidates, I've talked about that from different organizations, is that they just denigrate them. As soon as they even try to run for an office, they begin the rumor mill. They begin to denigrate them in ways that no one ever should be denigrated or even exposed in any, you know, and that's the thing. We can do anything, say anything and do anything, and it's wrong, but it happens. But women have to get tougher and just go right around it, walk right around it, walk through another door and find another group that's going to support you. So, and that's what we're going to do with the National Women's History Museum. And I think that's what I don't know. How do we come across to the public as really a mission, a movement, you know, what we want to accomplish, other than just people going to a museum? You know what I'm saying? I think we've got to really have stronger messages that this is what we want to tell. We want to tell the story, you know, and involve ourselves in whatever videos, like Tiffany Shalane, you know, her documentaries are just fantastic. She's going to have more too. But, you know, just to show the general public, this is what we're doing. We want women, girls and women, boys and men to know that we're all in this together. And that we need each other to get to the finish line more than we ever have in our entire lives right now.
You know, it's a great question. A lot of people say to me, so you guys are not building the building. And I say, no, we're not. We are the ones that made it happen. We all our donors, all our lobbyists, all our supporters, everybody went and for years worked to make that happen. And that's a massive accomplishment, but it's going to live within the Smithsonian Institution. It's going to be a different entity. And I often tell people, I am so grateful that I'm not building a museum, because if you're building a brick and mortar spectacular space like that, what percentage of your budget is going towards the people on the ground, the exhibitions, the lights on, the security? 75% of it. That's not my case. So to your point about how do we get people to understand, we start thinking about how do we pop up everywhere? How do we pop up in different cities? How do we partner with people like artists and filmmakers, et cetera? How do we get involved in film screenings that are hyper relevant so that you start seeing the name associated with this movement rather than the name is a central location?
Right.
One day I woke up and I finally had this, it took me like 8 months on the job. And then finally one day I woke up and I go, oh, I get it. My job is to put the National in National Women's History Museum. I have got to focus on how to bring this at a national level. I'm the decentralized strategy, not the centralized location. So that's how I think about it.
Well, we've got to toot our horns and we've got to toot very, very loud. But we're going to have to do a little screaming. We're going to have to do a little stomping. And we're going to have to get the people that... You know, I guess the question I have now would be, you know, now that you're really out there talking to some of the people that have been involved with the museum in years past, what are some of the things that they're saying to you that are that you think are the pros and cons? What are some of the pros and cons?
Well, I'll tell you, right before we started this conversation, I was talking to an organization called Women in Construction. They're a nationwide organization, and they asked me to come speak to them at their conference next month. Yeah. And so I got on the phone with them and I said, you guys, I just want to be clear. I'm not building a building. I know all your membership base are construction women. There's not a connection there. And so I told them, however, about this vision, about why it matters. You know, in that industry, for example, since everything with affirmative action happened last summer, they are now at the SBA level trying to kick out things like, you know, 8A certification for women, or, you know, small business set asides for women-owned businesses. This is going to hurt construction company owners who are women, because they're already in historically like male-dominated industry. The money tends to already go. So now they can't even compete with the set aside money. So I started telling them, you know, your next generation of women in construction, you have got to make sure that today you are out there, you're telling them their stories, you're continuing to work on their ability that despite all the nonsense that's happening with changes to DEI programs and set asides and affirmative action, you have to let them know that they have an entire army of women whose shoulders that they stand on in order to keep moving forward. And I said, that's what we're doing. We're focused on the storytelling. We're going to do the storytelling through exhibits, education, and embedding into the culture. Embedding in the culture means we're going to pop up places you wouldn't even expect it, like events, film screenings, et cetera, right? And you know what they said to me? They said, we really want you to be the speaker, because they understand that the two are necessary. We need, to your original point, we have got to band together as women, whether we are doing one thing or another. It is all about female alliance. If we have alliance, then we stand up for one another when somebody gets knocked down or when a potential female president gets criticized. Our first response is, we're aligned. I may not agree with her, but I'm aligned. Yeah. And so I think people understand that underlying message when I talk to them. And then they're like, well, how are you going to do that? You know, and I start talking about the strategy and the partnerships and the technology and the exhibits. And they're like, oh, where do we sign up? So, you know, that's kind of how they're responding. I think you can't ignore technology. Ever since COVID, we're all consumed by it. So,
well, I can tell you this: when the masses understand that the National Women's History Museum wants to collaborate and partner, they will come, because right now more people, more organizations are coming to Women Connect for Good than they ever had. This year has just been phenomenal. And the organizations that are coming, I am truly excited about. And of course, We like to share at Women Connect for Good. We like to support, but we also like to share. So that's the way it's going to work. And I think our board members need to understand that as well, because they're all extremely well connected with many organizations. And I think sometimes they don't realize the resources they do have that they could be sharing with the museum. So, I mean, I think, again, it's that education, as you said, of women supporting each other and partnering and collaborating. And it's so much more fun. It's so much more fun. So I can tell you this, we could keep talking forever. And I plan to see you and Susan next week at the Southern California Equestrian Center. And we will talk about more things, but what are your final thoughts? What would you like to just end with as far as what we've discussed today, as far as what your hopes and your dreams, and what do you want to see happen?
You know, there's plenty of days that stink, right? Where you get up and you don't feel good, or it's a hard day, or this and that.
Yeah.
But I'm so inspired by when I have seen women, any woman, believe in herself, move ahead, act, be compelled to do something she either didn't think she could or that was challenging. That is a game changer for me. That is why I get up every morning, despite the bad days, is to make sure that if I do my part and Dr. Nancy, you do your part and others do their part, that we are reversing that paradigm and that more and more women are just convinced, despite all the nonsense and the noise, that they can. And that's my goal in life, to do as much of that as I can, as broadly as I can.
I have watched women in different seminars and different venues. And when women are actually supporting each other, there's always one that just smiles, this big Chester smile, and said, I have never felt this kind of support in my entire life. And it feels wonderful. And it doesn't take that much to do just what we're talking about. So I know we're not done and we've got lots to do. And I'm glad I'm doing it with you. the blonde haired, blue eyed, beautiful.
I know. I'm gonna start wearing a wig. I will tell you though, people see me coming and they think, oh, you know, this curly girl, she's going to be like really nice. And, you know, and I'm like, little do you know.
I've been there. But Fred, thank you. Thank you. I look forward to working with you more and more and having more fun. And we've got some work to do, but we're just going to keep moving forward.
Amen. Absolutely. All right, Dr. Nancy.
I will see you next week.
Sounds good.
Have a great day. See you later. Bye-bye. If you enjoy these smart, amazing conversations, please subscribe, rate, and review them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And read and enjoy more amazing stories in my books, In This Together, How Successful Women Support Each Other in Work and Life, and Leading Women, 20 Influential Women Share Their Secrets to Leadership, Business, and Life. Thank you for listening.